This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. If you have kids in elementary or high school, chances are, if your child is not autistic, someone in your child's grade is, and they're getting help. Vermont provides a wide range of support services for children with autism. But what about after high school? Unfortunately, the door to higher education has often been closed to students with autism. According to a study last year by the American Academy of Pediatrics, young people with autism spectrum disorders had a greater than 50% chance of being unemployed and disengaged from higher education for the first 2 years after high school. Currently, about 30 colleges and universities across the country offer specialized programs for students with autism, and those numbers are on the rise, which isn't surprising since the number of children diagnosed with autism has also been steadily increasing. Today on Vermont Edition, we'll talk about what's available in Vermont to help students with autism enter and succeed in college, including a unique new nonprofit that's now working with three colleges in the state. VPR's Nina Keck kicks off today's program with a report on the College Steps program.
For many families, sending a child off to college is a cherished rite of passage, one that combines football games, cafeteria food, dorm life, and late nights at the library.
We had always been focused on college education. It was kind of an important thing to our family, and, you know, it's something that we all grew up with.
Jeff Monder and his wife, Pam, sit at their kitchen table in Shrewsbury.
The conversation in the house always began, when you graduate from college, you can do XYZ.
But Pam says that changed when their son Dashiell was 11 and they learned he had autism.
And I remember when he was diagnosed, all of a sudden it hit me that we might have to think about things a little differently than we had considered before.
It wasn't that Dash wasn't smart enough for college. The Monders say he's great in math and did well in Stafford Technical Center's automotive technology program. But Jeff Monder says college is about so much more than academics.
One of the big challenges with autism is successful social interaction. And, you know, from my experience and probably anybody that's gone to college, a big part of college is social interaction.
Like being able to work in groups, speak to a professor one-on-one, and navigate all kinds of campus interactions. While the Monders say Dash had wonderful support services in high school, college was a big question mark. It's a quandary facing many Vermont families.
What we were finding is that there's a huge population of individuals who are falling through the cracks after high school ends for them.
Lauren Merritt is director of the College Steps program, a Vermont-based nonprofit that helps students with autism succeed in college.
There's a lack of access and of support for these individuals. And so they're coming out after having these fully integrated experiences in high school with limited options of what life after high school can look like for them.
College Steps currently offers two-year programs at Johnson State, Castleton State, and starting next fall at Southern Vermont College in Bennington.
When we first accept somebody into the College Steps program, we sit down with them and we talk about person-centered planning. So we talk about what are your goals? What are your goals around a career?
But she says they also have to figure out what practical things might be standing in the way of those goals.
Well, thinking of going to college, it made me a little nervous.
Dash Monder enrolled at Castleton last fall and says for him, getting to and from campus by himself was one of his first hurdles. With help from the College Steps, Dash says he's now able to use Rutland City buses and a private taxi company to get to and from school.
It's a really good feeling. When I first rode the bus, I wasn't sure what it was like to ride from the bus station all the way to Castleton. But then after I did it for the first time, I suddenly got the hang of it, and then it was really, really a really good experience for me there. I really had fun doing that.
College Steps has a program coordinator at each campus, but they also hire and train fellow students who work closely with participating students to help them assimilate on campus. College Steps students don't take a full course load, typically two classes at a time, but they're also expected to join campus organizations. For Dash, that meant writing a column for the student newspaper on video games, which turned into an internship with the Rutland Herald. The highly individualized and structured approach of the College Steps program is costly, about $8,000 per semester, and that's on top of tuition, fees, books, transportation, and meals. It's a steep price tag, but Pam Maunder doesn't regret the cost.
Do we think it's been worth it for him? Absolutely. When I look at the growth over the past year, it catches me.
Her eyes fill with tears. Dash reaches across the table and gives his mother's hand a squeeze.
A year ago, when Dashiell was still in high school and facing graduation, we knew he was going to be in this program. I don't think that we had a good sense of how far he was going to come in such a short period of time. You know, we talk a lot about him developing independence, and I think he's done a great job. He's leaped forward so much.
Dash smiles. Next month, he says he'll be spending a week in Washington, D.C., taking part in a summer leadership academy sponsored by the Autism Self-Advocacy Network.
And I actually got accepted into this conference, and it's a really surprising experience, and it's going to be a great feeling for me to spread the word that I've actually been through the College Steps program for a year, and self-advocate and speak for myself at this conference of being an autistic person on the spectrum. It's a really great feeling.
After he completes the two-year College Steps program, Dash says he hopes to attend Castleton State full-time and live on campus just like any other student. For VPR News, I'm Nina Keck.
We're looking at how to support and encourage students with autism in the college arena today on the program. And let's turn for a moment to the director of that program Nina Keck was just telling us about. Aaron Rakow, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you so much for having me.
So students who go through College Steps to attend college attend for 2 years, and when they finish, they have a certificate of higher learning, not a BA or an associate's degree. So how does a certificate of higher learning help them?
That's correct. And really what we have to look at here first and foremost is the research on this type of a program. So our two-year program, based on research that we've seen of similar programs across the country, really indicates that in general, graduates of this type of service, of this type of formalized post-secondary educational curricula, living with autism or intellectual disabilities, which College Steps serves both populations, not only achieve higher employability, as you were already hearing about from Dash's story, but also are earning more in take-home pay than their counterparts that who have not benefited from this type of post-secondary opportunity. And moreover, evidence has suggested that graduates of this type of integrated post-secondary program achieve higher levels of job satisfaction once they graduate, lower levels of turnover once they get into those jobs than individuals, again, who have not benefited from this type of service. So really what we're talking about here is a quality of life issue. The skills that the students gain from this two-year program directly relate to improved independent functioning, employability, and again, as you heard in the story, the ability to learn within an environment alongside their peers, as everyone, in our opinions, has the right to do.
When an employer, however, sees somebody who comes and says, I have a certificate of higher learning, what does that say to them? I mean, that's not the same thing as having an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree.
That's correct. And in some cases, as you heard with Dash's story, and in other cases for other students of ours, they are going on to benefit from either associate's degrees or bachelor degrees, and this is sort of a primary experience for them. But regardless of that, even for students that have not gone on and achieved additional levels of education, employers are actually seeing and are very attracted to individuals in the College Steps program because of the level of supervision and support that they are receiving while they're learning about any particular trade. So we emphasize and are very serious about making sure that each of the students, as they enter into that vocational area of interest, are fully supported as much as they would need to be in order to learn the skill set necessary. So when they get to the point of independently functioning within that job or are set up for that job interview, not only are they excelling within that context and being able to really demonstrate the skills that they've learned very effectively in the form of a job interview, but they're also now, because of that structured environment that they had received that primary experience in regarding the vocational trade, better equipped to handle the demands of the job. So employers, for the feedback that we're getting thus far, are very impressed with the quality of the educational experience that the students are receiving from the College Tips program and have no reservations in making offers to these students once they're graduating.
You've been working with two Vermont colleges, and now you're adding a third. So you've been working with Johnson State and Castleton State, and now you're bringing on Southern Vermont College and in talks with a couple of other Vermont colleges. What are the colleges that are participating telling you or giving you in the way of feedback about how they feel about this program?
It's a great question, and this is something that we have spent considerable time really working individually with the colleges to secure. So these partnerships are something that we are extremely appreciative of, and the colleges that have taken part in this program, Castleton, Johnson, and soon to be Southern Vermont College, have been really just ideal partners in that regard. There have, of course, been questions from the beginning. What we're talking about here is a very progressive educational program in many ways, and I would be dishonest to say that there were not people that had some initial reservations. But what's amazing about this is it's been a transformative process not only for the students, but also in transforming the culture of the campus community that College Steps represents or is partnered with. So the students that are serving as peer mentors that you heard highlighted in that piece have not only learned about the area in which they're supporting the individual College Steps scholar, but they've also been able to get a much richer educational experience from that perspective. They've been able to add to their own level of learning on that level, and that's something that the college really values. In addition to that, and most importantly, we really emphasize very careful collaboration with each of the, not only administrators, but faculty members that interact with each of the College Steps students to make sure that if there are any questions that are there, that they can be addressed. If there are any issues on campus, that we can also address those. And what we have found, and this has been very consistent across both of the programs that we're running now, is that although we have in place by default at the beginning of each semester weekly check-ins with the core team that's working with each of our students, by the time the second or third month of the program progresses, what individual faculty members are saying to us is, while we really appreciate the feedback and really appreciate the fact that the program director is being so responsive and following up, this student is one of the best students in my class. If anything, he's one of the last folks that I need someone to check in with me about. He's not only participating in every element of the class, he or she are doing everything that we're asking of them from a homework standpoint and are asking those critical questions that I would want to see out of my students. So,
Aaron, let me ask you, though, because we just have a brief amount of time here, but let me ask you about the money part of this. As we heard in Nina's story, it's about $16,000 per year to go through the College Steps program, and that's on top of all the other costs associated with college, including the tuition paid to the college. Now, I understand that there are grants, there are some state funding programs, but regardless, what is that $16,000 actually paying for?
About 95% of our costs are going directly to personnel. So in order to make sure that we're maintaining a ratio that provides the best possible support structure for our students, those funds are going directly to those needs. It is a high cost, and it's something that we try to keep as low as possible. Thankfully, there are a multitude of both state and local funding streams that we've been able to access or help our students access. In addition to that, Voc Rehab has been a wonderful partner and has contributed to each of our students. VSAC has been another element of support for helping with non-degree grants. And there have been additional lines of funding that we've helped students tap into, including the PASS plan through the Social Security Department, which helps individual students work towards independent living and professional outcomes. So at the end of the day, Nina, what's amazing about this program is although we have a price tag that can be daunting for some individuals, we've been able to mitigate that price tag significantly through these different funding lines so that in various cases there are students that are paying very little for this very high level of service.
Aaron, you're actually part of a consortium of programs that are designed to help students get to college and do well there who might need a little extra support. Can you briefly just describe what your other partners are doing?
Sure. I'm glad you mentioned this because everything that the College Steps program has done over the past 2 years has been in concert with a multitude of community and state partners, and without that support, none of this would have been possible. The Department of Disabilities, Aging, and Independent Living, the Center on Disability and Community Inclusion, the SUCCEED program, Mansfield Hall, and Global Campuses are all now part of, along with College Steps, a post-secondary ed consortium. We meet regularly to identify action items and set ultimately a group of best practice standards to help sustain post-secondary curricula for these populations within the fabric of Vermont for generations to come. So to this end, we are currently working on publishing our first policy brief on the matter and present at a variety of both national and local conferences on our collective work.
Aaron Rakow is the director of the College Steps program. Thank you very much for being on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
We're taking a look at how to help students with autism go on to college after high school and thrive in an atmosphere that can be very different from the structured high school or home environment they're used to. Listeners, if you have questions about how to make this work, or if you want to share how you made it work in your family, we've started a conversation on our Facebook page, so you can post there or call 1-800-639-2211. Seth posted this comment saying, as a mid-30s guy recently diagnosed as high-functioning Asperger's, which I guess they're now just calling high-functioning autism, it warms my heart to see these resources becoming available to those coming after me. I'm wishing my own wiring had been identified earlier in life and such resources had been available then. But hey, we all do what we can with what we have at the time, and I've not done too badly by some standards. Again, share your experiences on our Facebook page or call 1-800-639-2211. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're exploring some of the programs in our area that support autistic students in higher education. We've learned about one program that helps guide students in traditional college settings. If this is something that affects your family and you have a question about it or want to share your experience, you can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. There's also a lot of activity on social media. There's a conversation on our Facebook page. And on Twitter, Shay Totten tweets, thank you for today's program on autism in college. We're prepping our college-bound kid. This is very helpful. And Catherine Beaudreau tweets, fantastic discussion about children with autism attending college. So much potential in these children's development. Again, share your thoughts wherever you see fit or call 1-800-639-2211. Let's turn now to a college that is itself geared towards helping students with learning disabilities that is also working with autistic students. Andy Donahue is a counselor and the coordinator of Autism Spectrum Disorder Programs at Landmark College in Putney. Andy, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me.
Landmark has been working with students who are on the autism spectrum for about 5 years now, and as I understand it, a little over 10% of your student body population deals with some form of autism. How do you actually work with families even before a student enters Landmark College to help ensure a smooth transition?
Well, one of the things we realized quite a while ago is the value of the parents' input on helping us determine what might be helpful for the student. So we have an early orientation where I start out after reviewing the file, after the student's been admitted, I interview the parents. It's about 90-minute interview. And I usually start a conversation by saying, if your son or daughter's been accepted, tell me everything that's going to be helpful to help me make connections to resources on the campus, matching up with roommates.
Andy, I'm sorry, your phone line's a little rough. I think what you were just saying, you actually have an hour and a half conversation with the parents before the student even enters, you know, saying, what is everything I need to know to help your student?
Exactly. And it's a very frank discussion. We get a lot of information that's really helps us place the students with roommates, match them with advisors, help them access social resources on campus from the parents' perspective. And, you know, something that we realize is that a lot of the parents of students on the spectrum have had to really fight for everything that their child has received. And they're a great resource for us as far as letting us know what we can do.
What about when students get to school? I mean, it can be scary and nerve-wracking for any student entering a college setting to have to interact with roommates who they've never known before, different kinds of people, or, you know, situations like a dining hall where you walk in and you don't know anybody and you don't know where to sit. I mean, that's nerve-wracking for any student. But for someone on the autism spectrum who might have more social difficulties, how do you make that easier for them?
Well, it starts with the orientation. We have a small cohort of about 25 students come in. working with orientation leaders, who a lot of the orientation leaders are also on the spectrum and former orientation members themselves. And we really walk through everything that the student can expect, and that includes going into the dining room, introducing them to the dining room staff. We have certain tables in the dining room that we say, these are places you can always sit when you come in here, and there'll be people who you know. And it's really allowed the students to, once school does start, especially once all of the other new students come in, they have a place to go, they feel comfortable, they know what's going on, and it really reduces the anxiety quite a bit.
Andy, what are the academic expectations for students who come to Landmark who are on the autism spectrum, and really for any students? I mean, do you have different kind of academic expectations for them?
No, the academic expectations are the same. Landmark does have, provides tremendous supports for students with the academic component. And I think the only difference with the students that I work with would be that there's a little bit of additional help in accessing those resources, you know, maybe actually walking with someone into the Center for Academic Support above and beyond. But for the expectations, they're identical.
Andy Donahue is a counselor and the coordinator of Autism Spectrum Disorder Programs at Landmark College in Putney. Andy, thanks for telling us a little bit about how these programs work at Landmark. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
We're talking today about helping students who have autism succeed in college, get to college in the first place. There are a lot of programs out there that are emerging, and we're wading through some of them and talking about how it works here in Vermont. If you have a question or if you'd like to share your own experience, again, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. And now we'll turn to Jane Thierfeld Brown. She's a national expert and consultant, and she's the author of The Parent's Guide to College for Students on the Autism Spectrum. Jane, it's a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
One thing that we haven't really talked about so far in this discussion is that there's really a very wide variety of types of needs and difficulties that students on the autism spectrum have when it comes to going to college. I mean, some may be academically gifted, some may have mild forms of autism, others may have a lot of challenges. And so there's a lot of different kinds of things that we're talking about here when we just say autism and college.
You're absolutely right. And today you've heard about one program that provides a higher ed certificate and another place like Landmark where they do provide college degrees but offer a tremendous amount of support. It's a very Landmark is known for support services and a very different model, which is what many students need. And other students need a community college model where they can live at home and try some classes while possibly working part-time. And other students go to a state university and need supports there, or some need no supports at all. There's a vast, that's why it's called a spectrum. There's a vast variety of need.
You run a consulting business for families trying to find the right college programs for their autistic children. How do you help them wade through all of this when there are so many different types of programs, so many different costs of programs, and so many different types of students?
Well, we do wade through it. Our business, College Autism Spectrum, the college search is only one piece of it. We do a lot of training at colleges and around the country. We go to colleges and help colleges learn how to provide these services for students on the spectrum. We do a lot of work on transition with K-12 systems in how to help them get their students ready for what they're going to meet in life after high school. And our main business is supporting students. All of us work at colleges. All of us who work for College Autism Spectrum are disability service providers at colleges. I work at the University of Connecticut School of Law and do disability services there and student services. And we provide those services remotely so that students who choose a college that's right for them, that is not local or doesn't have services, we can help with that. But what we find really important is helping students find that right college. And what we really ask the parents and the student mainly is, number one, what's your goal? is the goal a degree? Is the goal a couple years of development? Is the goal to go to college? And then what programs does, what kind of services does the student need? What program of service is appropriate for the student? And then we really ask them to think about a lot of questions to ask that school. What's the school's record of success? Have students graduated from this program and been successful over time? What's the staff at the program, and what is the staff training? That varies greatly from program to program. What option, are there options for levels of support? For example, a student who comes in as a first-year student might need a tremendous amount of supports that we hope can start to be weaned over the time they're at that institution, because we really want the student to hopefully be more independent by the time they graduate. And then, of course, it's the location of the school and types of programs, because it can be the right program at the wrong school or the wrong program at the right school. And so there's a lot to really think about to make sure that people are successful where they go.
And listeners, if this is something your family is dealing with and you have a question for Jane, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Jane Thierfeld-Brown is Director of Student Services, as she said, at the University of Connecticut School of Law. She's also written a book, Helping Parents of Autistic Children, with a guide to college and helping those students themselves get to the right college, to the right program, as she said. Jane, I'm curious, because you mentioned that you work with colleges themselves, and of course you work at UConn. Are colleges becoming more aware of students on the autism spectrum and having those kinds of support systems, or do you often need an outside support system to come in and help a student at a college?
It's amazing the difference we've seen even in over the last decade. My colleagues, Lisa King from Minnesota and Lori Wolf, who's from Boston University, the three of us have been doing this for about 15 years. And when we started at our professional association and said to people, let's talk about students on campus with Asperger's syndrome, and colleagues were saying, asparagus, what? What are you guys talking about? That's not the case anymore. Now everybody is talking about autism and Asperger's, and every college in the country has students on the spectrum in attendance. It's whether those students have disclosed to the college and are asking for supports, or whether the college provides additional supports. So yes, we've come a very long way, and even in the number of programs. A few years ago, there were maybe three or four in the country, and now, as you said at the top of the program, there's about 30.
You've had to deal with this and some of the questions that families are going through who you talk with. Your son, Max, is now 21?
Yes.
And he's on the spectrum.
He is on the one end of the spectrum. I like to say that we live on one end of the spectrum and I work on the other end of the spectrum. So he is on the very low end of the spectrum. And so he's now transitioning out of the school district, because our school districts in Connecticut go up until age 21 and into adult services. And actually, lucky for all of you, Vermont has some of the best adult services in the country. You have done a great job, as we've heard earlier in the program, with a lot of different kinds of programs and a lot of different educational programs. We've been lucky in that he's had a wonderful education, and now we're transitioning him to a day program. He's very low functioning, so he won't be going on to college. He won't be appropriate for a think college type of program. Hmm. But that is exactly what parents need to think about, is what is appropriate. And, you know, we had to make that decision for our son. And despite the fact that my husband and I both have worked at colleges for 35 years and both our daughters have graduated from college, but it wasn't appropriate, anywhere near appropriate for our son. So we had to make that decision. But it really wasn't a decision to be made, because he really, he reads at maybe a kindergarten level. So it's just, it's not appropriate. But we have to find what is appropriate for each individual family and student. And I say family because even if it's right for the student, if it doesn't work for the family, it's not going to work. For example, if you find a program that's perfect for the student, but it might cost way more than the family can manage, then it's not right for the family.
Well, so, I'm glad you brought up that cost because I want to ask you about that. I mean, we heard at the beginning of the program about the College Steps program, and that's a $16,000 a year program on top of college tuition.
Yes.
Some programs cost a lot less, some cost more.
Oh, yes.
So, I mean, how do families deal with that level of cost?
The majority cannot. I have known families to mortgage homes in order to send their sons and daughters to these programs. I've known families that have moved to be closer to a program so that they could help support their son or daughter. I think that's when I really say to the family, let's think through what's the goal here. If the goal is to help create independence, and if that student needs that high of a level of support, then is the student really appropriately going to become more independent? Now, I just want to discern between two very important things. The first program that was talked about, College Steps, to me sounds, they didn't mention Think College, but to me it sounds much more like a Think College program. And Think College is a wonderful program that comes out of the University of Massachusetts Center for Community Inclusion that was really the pioneer in developing college programs for students with intellectual disability.
And actually, College Steps did sort of come out of the Think College program itself.
Okay.
They're separate now, but...
Okay. That's what it sounded like to me. And that is for a different level of student, for somebody who would need a different level of services. And so for those students, a program like Think College is a wonderful post-high school opportunity for many students who really have incredible talents in some area, or as many of the families that we talk to, that perfect SAT or ACT kind of student, their main needs may be support in the social arena. They may not be able to navigate the social arena of college, which we know also has a lot to do with work skills, because the workplace now really is not a solo day. It's working with other people. It's your ability to work as a team. And so a lot of what we teach in that level of programming is those students with incredible academic ability need to learn those workplace skills to be able to work with other people during the day. And that's our goal for those students at that end of the spectrum.
Going back to the money piece for just a second, though, does the cost of so many of these programs really put college out of reach for moderate to low-income families who have children, who have students who want to go to college but are on the autism spectrum?
I don't think so. I think it's finding the appropriate support services. I think some of the services, it may be the Cadillac of support services, but it may be much more than you can afford. Look at families whose sons or daughters get into very expensive private colleges, and the family makes the decision that the student will either attend a state university or a community college for 2 years and then go to that private university for 2 years, thus graduating with that diploma, but saving half the tuition. There are ways to do this, and there's ways that people can go to program. The average college support program costs about $3,000 to $3,500 a semester. That's average. And most of that is for anywhere from 3 to 8 hours a week of service. Now, if your student needs more than that 8 hours a week and needs a lot of independent living skills and really needs what sounds more like a one-to-one, then you're going to be paying more for that, and you're going to be looking to your state agencies to help pay for that. For students who don't need more and really just need more of guidance and need more learning of beyond high school of how to negotiate social environments, then you can go to one of the lower cost programs.
So Jane, bottom line for parents who are listening, who may be just thinking about this, starting to think about it, or even are going through the process but haven't maybe had the kind of support that you give parents, what questions should they be asking about how to assess the quality or the value of a program for their child?
You really want to ask the disability services staff or the autism services staff. you want to ask some direct questions. You want to ask what they know about sensory sensitivities. That's usually a key for a lot of disability services people. If they understand the sensory integration dysfunction piece of autism, usually that means that they really understand this area and that they'll be able to work with your student. You want to ask what their caseload is like. The average disability services person in this country has anywhere from 300 to 600 students on their caseload. That's very different than a program that can offer a tremendous amount of support to students. So you really want to ask how much time the office will have for your student each week. And you want to ask about what kind of academic support, if needed, they can get and how independent the student has to be. The biggest difference is from high school to college is the laws change. And so we're going from laws of entitlement, which is as it should be in K-12 through IDEA, to ADA and Section 504 of the Rehab Act, which are equal access laws and civil rights legislation, and they don't come with any funding behind them. So it's a very different level of service, and families need to be aware of that going in and then be able to ask all those questions of the school before committing.
Jane Thierfeld-Brown is Director of Student Services at the University of Connecticut School of Law, and she's the author of three books, including The Parent's Guide to College for Students on the Autism Spectrum. Jane, thank you very much for being on our show today.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, I should also say we have all of the programs that we've mentioned today linked at vpr.net. Click on Vermont Edition to find those links if you need more resources. Coming up, Vermont City Marathon organizers prepare extra security measures for this weekend's race. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. This weekend, 8,000 runners and up to 30,000 spectators are expected to be present for the 25th running of the Vermont City Marathon in Burlington. With Boston still fresh in their minds, the marathon organizer Run Vermont and the Burlington Police Department have instituted special procedures and rules for this year's race. Here to outline those is Run Vermont Executive Director Peter Delaney. Peter, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Well, thank you for having me.
You ready for Sunday?
We're getting there. We're pretty close.
So what's still left to do?
Well, we're doing a little overtime work on the weatherman.
Oh, yeah, good. Well, see if you can work on that. We'd like to have perfect weather for the marathon.
As would we.
So your staff and the Burlington Police met just a couple of days after the bombings at the Boston Marathon to reassess security at the Vermont City Marathon. What was that conversation like?
It was just a review of the existing plans in place and I think an assessment on the part of law enforcement of what they would like to add to the program, given what they had learned and what we were all learning had transpired at Boston. They did most of that assessment from the security perspective amongst themselves. We worked with them to help them understand the flow of the event, the event venues were busy when they weren't busy and how they were set up, some of those kinds of things, so that they could put together a plan that they would bring forward for the race this coming Sunday.
Well, and let's talk about some of the extra security and precautions that you are taking this Sunday, some of the logistics, first of all. Race spectators, they're being advised not to bring backpacks, big bags with them. So what should they bring? And if they need to bring something, how do they bring it?
Well, I think what we've suggested is that if you have to bring something, if you can at all bring it in a clear plastic bag, that would be the best method. If you can't put your belongings in clear plastic bags, certainly duffel bags and whatnot, we will, I think the security folks will be looking to conduct some random inspections if they see lots of bags that are coming into venues. Certainly, you don't want to leave any type of personal belongings unattended. Those types of things will be picked up pretty quickly, and probably folks won't be able to see them again.
Any restrictions or special arrangements for runners?
We've asked runners to do the same thing. It's fairly typical for runners, as you will pack some dry clothes and maybe change of shoes and whatnot in a gear bag. That the organizers, ourselves in this case, would collect that stuff at the start of the race and then transport it to the finish area where runners can get it after they've crossed the finish line. So this year, we are asking all the runners to provide their gear in a clear plastic bag, and that will be part of what is provided to them as part of race packet pickup. So they shouldn't really have any excuse for not putting in a bag, and if they show up at the gear check and don't have it in a clear plastic bag, we'll still have some extras there to accommodate those needs.
I understand that there will be plainclothes police officers as well as an enhanced law enforcement presence in terms of police officers that you'd recognize. If someone asks to search your belongings and they're not dressed as a police officer, what should you do?
Look for a police officer because the plan has been announced by the security team is to essentially have any plainclothes officers will be with a uniformed officer. So if a uniformed officer or a plainclothes officer approaches you and there isn't a uniformed officer, immediately look for a uniformed officer to assist you.
Peter, do you think that all of this enhanced security could dampen the enthusiasm of spectators to expect fewer of them than normal?
I don't think so, and that's certainly I think Chief Schirling was speaking to a radio audience this morning that I overheard, and I think his perspective is quite responsible. You know, this is our 25th anniversary. We want folks to feel safe while they're here. That's why they're going to be out and visible, but they're not going to be looking to interfere with the flow of the event and the way that people are participating. We hope that if they have to stop you and ask you a question or if spectators ask some directions, everyone will cooperate and we're going to have a great time. We've got lots of special guests coming for this race. We have Bill Rogers and Frank Shorter and Jeff Galloway, Bart Yasso, all some of the most notable runners in the country for generations. They're here to help us celebrate the 25th anniversary. A lot of the people who originally founded the Vermont City Marathon, Gordon McFarland and his team, they'll all be here to celebrate. So
it should be a fantastic time. I'm sure everybody who's involved is really looking forward to it, whether the weather cooperates or not. Run Vermont Executive Director Peter Delaney, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Race officials are saying plan to pack out. There will be fewer trash cans than normal, so plan to pack out anything you bring in with you. A recent conversation about the number of passwords we have to maintain in our daily lives has VPR's Tim Johnson fantasizing about a simpler time, when password meant something that was easy to remember.
Whenever I hear the term password, one thing comes to mind. It's the bit from the Marx Brothers movie Horse Feathers, where Groucho tries to get into a speakeasy but doesn't know the password. He tricks Chico, who is guarding the door, into telling him the password is swordfish, and after entering the club, Groucho locks Chico outside. I saw the movie for the first time back in the 70s, and I never forgot it. Swordfish became my response to anyone who asked for a password. When I got my first computer in the 90s, I had to use it. It was so easy to remember. Over the years, swordfish was my go-to password, until I learned not to use the same password for different applications. Once someone learns your password, you can end up like Chico, locked outside the door while someone has their way with your life. And sadly, swordfish had to be retired to the password graveyard. My home and work computers and their networks need passwords. So does my cell phone. I have multiple email passwords, social network passwords, bank passwords. The list goes on. It's starting to get a little ridiculous, and it brings up a dilemma. How are we supposed to remember all of them? Yeah, I can write them down, but where do I put them? In the old school Rolodex next to my computer? I've tried writing them in secret locations. That turned out to be a bad idea, as I've forgotten where they are. I'm forced to change the passwords and then decide where I'm going to hide the new ones. And none of this is helped by the fact that passwords have gotten complicated. They need a minimum of characters, numbers, symbols, and capital letters. It's a little shaming when a web page tells me that my clever Fort Knox constellation of letters and symbols offers only minimal protection. It means that my passwords now look like gigantic curse words in a newspaper comic bubble. I recently had a conversation with a colleague about all the old passwords that would continue to occupy space in his head. I envisioned the two of us as old men on a park bench someday talking. You know what was a great one? My iTunes password in 2015 was Rhapsody, but instead of a Y, I used two E's and a zero instead of an O, and the A was capped. Boy, that was a good one. Yeah, that was one of your best, but it was no swordfish.
VPR's Tim Johnson, and boy, can I relate. That'll do it for today. Tomorrow, Bob Kinzel will be joined by former Governor Jim Douglas. Bob's here now, and what's your conversation going to be about?
Jane, Governor Douglas has some strong concerns about the future of the Republican Party, both in Vermont and across the country. We'll discuss these concerns and talk about what Douglas thinks the GOP needs to do to become a stronger political force in the future.
And if you have a thought on that, send a note to vermontedition@vpr.net. Our producers are Patty Daniels, Rick Singeri, and Sage Van Wing. We have production assistance from Tim Johnson. Peter Biello directed the program, and our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.